For Your Ears Only, for the week of July 14th and Bastille Day, I'm David Alpern.
I'm Eddie Robinson.
There was a fight there. There was a struggle. And at some points, it appears, based on the evidence, that the defendant was on top. And at some points, the victim was on top. It's wrestling, struggling, whatever you want to call it. But why did it occur? Why did it occur?
Let's just talk about self-defense. Do we think he might have acted in self-defense? Not convinced. I have some doubt, I have some concern that he just may have acted in self-defense. And if you reach that conclusion, you get to stop. You really do. Why? Because self-defense is a defense to everything.
This isn't a complicated case. It's a common sense case. And it's not a case about self-defense. It's a case about self-denial. George Zimmerman. The defendant didn't shoot Trayvon Martin because he had to. He shot him because he wanted to.
And then it was over, except for the verdict. After dramatic but predictable differences between prosecution and defense summations in the George Zimmerman murder trial, Chief Prosecutor Bernie DeLorianda stressed the context of the confrontation that led to Zimmerman's fatal shooting of Trayvon Martin, unfounded suspicion that the unarmed black teen was up to no good. Defense attorney Mark O'Mara warned the female jurors against an emotional verdict, focusing on that final struggle and the reasonable possibility Zimmerman felt enough fear to justify firing. In rebuttal, Prosecutor John Guy brought emotion back to the fore, along with what he called lies that showed the tragedy did not play out as Zimmerman held.
As we record this show, the jury is still out. But the legal issues, the differences in approach, and the message that may be sent by the verdict— second-degree murder, manslaughter, or not guilty, are clear. To discuss them, for your ears only, we're joined again by Renee Sandler, a Maryland defense attorney, former prosecutor, and frequent HLN cable TV legal analyst. Her website is www.sandlerlawllc.com. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back.
Given that Judge Deborah Nelson was bound to instruct the jury to ignore emotion, was Prosecutor John Guy wise to stress it? Was it more likely to work with an all-female jury?
I think it's more likely to work with an all-female jury where you have the facts as we have them here, a 17-year-old unarmed African-American male who was murdered coming home from a store. So emotion with this demographic of jury, I think, is powerful. However, it's a bit strange that you have a prosecutor injecting emotion back into a case when this is about the facts and the law and the evidence.
The prosecution raised questions about why Zimmerman got out of his car and how he could have reached his gun if it was tucked behind him when Martin was on top. But they never advanced the scenario that implied that Zimmerman was stalking Martin with his gun already out or that he drew it after the teen was backing off. Why not give the jury that to consider?
I think it's an inference here, a very, very basic inference, but the facts and the evidence just don't support it. The facts and the evidence almost don't support even the ill will and hatred that the state has based their entire case on for second-degree murder. Remember, the police and the state's attorney's office initially declined to prosecute at all. So that theory, the stalking theory, the facts just don't support.
But his own language, foul as it was, did seem to suggest at least ill will, if not hatred, spite, or evil intent. But the law doesn't say they all have to be present at the same time, only one of them.
That's correct. And I think the crux of the state's evidence against George Zimmerman to support its theory of second-degree murder is his prior 911 calls and sort of his vigilanteism as a wannabe police officer and what they want the jury to infer and believe from those calls cumulatively to support his state of mind the night that Trayvon Martin was killed. And certainly the state wants the jury to believe that that is enough for ill will or profiling of Trayvon Martin.
O'Mara stressed the prosecution's failure to present and prove an alternative to Zimmerman's account. But he did not do much to rebut the charge that account was based on a series of lies and discrepancies. Was that a failure?
You know, I think it's important here to remember that the defense has absolutely no burden to prove anything. They can stand silent. They can do nothing. And the jury can't infer anything from that silence. So for him not to do something, I think we have to be careful not to be too critical here. But I will say this. The defense did a masterful job of not only providing point-by-point answers to the evidence in this case, but an alternative explanation by way of their animation that they wanted to use and that they did use in closing as to how this event transpired.
Well, that leads to my question. For self-defense, can a person pick a fight, find out he's losing, and then claim fear or death or severe injury to justify a fatal shooting? In other words, is the jury restrained or confined only to those seconds of the struggle before the shooting, or can it look at the whole incident?
That's a fantastic question, and this is the nuance of self-defense laws in this country, and particularly Florida and Stand Your Ground. Whether or not there's a duty to retreat, whether or not retreating is important here. And I think to answer your question, you have to look at the context, and that's why the timeline and chronology of this event, meaning this altercation between these two, is so important. The short answer is yes. A person can be an initial aggressor, then retreat away from that, and then find themselves back in the fray, reasonably fearing for their life, and claiming self-defense ultimately if that person is charged. It seems a bit backwards, and it seems a bit impossible, but the laws in regarding self-defense are highly factually determinative, and we have to look at each and every fact.
How important is all the evidence of Zimmerman's actual injuries if self-defense is based on what he says he feared during the struggle?
I think tremendously important. George Zimmerman's injuries complete the story of what happened between two people. Now it's for the jury to determine the weight to give those injuries, the evidence there. But I think Dr. DeMeo's testimony, the pathologist that the defense put forward, put that into context of the whole picture consistent with the version of events that George Zimmerman has told here about what transpired. So very, very important, George Zimmerman's injuries.
We all know many cases where jurors say common sense told them the defendant was guilty of something, but the state just didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Sometimes the follow-up is a civil suit that the defendant then loses, as in the O.J. Simpson murder case. Would you expect that in this situation?
I would expect something to come of it in terms of a lawsuit. We have to remember that a lawsuit was already underway and a settlement reached between the Martin family and the Homeowners Association, which did not make its way into this trial. They settled that case for $1 million. So again, the jury did not hear about that, but very likely another lawsuit against George Zimmerman individually is absolutely likely to follow.
Renee Sandler is a Maryland defense attorney, former prosecutor, and frequent HLN cable TV legal analyst. Her website, SandlerLawLLC.com.
Quote from the news, if there's no insurance available, it's difficult to do anything. That was David Shriver of the Kansas Association of School Boards, whose plans to arm teachers and staff, like many around the country, are making it hard to buy the necessary coverage.
Next, Egypt, coup and consequences. For your ears only.